Monopoly is a board game that you may have played as a child, or as a parent you may play it with your kids today. It involves properties, money, rolling the dice, accumulating houses and hotels, charging rent, doing mortgages, learning all about a little bit of economics and competitive marketing in a competitive game environment. And that's a way that many people learn is about markets and economics, and that's can be quite a significant amount of the knowledge that they carry through education. In education, they can learn about economics in class, talking, writing essays, reading books, and having classes on it, and actually doing a bit of role play and stuff like that. And it's the two ways to learn. Now, I want to actually explore a similar type of proposition of a board game to teach something called projectile motion, which we typically teach by breaking up into little bits, making sure people understand every little piece first, and then introducing experiments and then equations, and then building up a final understanding. And what we notice is that by the end of the time, we start off with 100% of the students, then 70% of the students, and then by the end, we only get about 10% of the students, which finally make it to the master area. So that's the traditional teaching. Now I'm going to try and look at a board game that you can teach, instruct. There's nothing to lose from it. A sort of a board or game activity which develops the concepts and understanding. This is Peter Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific or discuss teaching techniques. As a background, I'm doing my own cardiac rehab, basically on many levels of strategies, learning how to, I suppose, rehab and develop podcasting and broadcasting skills, just even setting up microphones and setting up the settings and setting up everything to go through, just speaking, being able to speak coherently and clearly for a long time, and stack up thoughts ready to go, not too much in terms of the quantity you have to get through. In terms of podcasts per day, I obviously can't write things down. I can actually set things up, but then I've also got to get to other strategies like setting up where I podcast. And in this case, I've podcasting possibly at midnight at the end of a structured cardiac walk. So I've done my walk, and walking up here I've thought rather than actually trying to broadcast while walking. You've got all the distractions which come across you, and I'm at this restful place where I'm standing at a lookout over a canyon, over Glenbrook Canyon, and looking out over Sydney, the glistening lights of Sydney, while I discuss what's going on. So that's the pretext, the background. I always have the introduction, a little bit of a talk about where I am in cardiac rehab, because I think some people are interested, and it's good to actually give myself a bit of rest time and concentration time to see what I'm trying to actually achieve in terms of my cardiac rehab of the actual talk. So this one is to look at projectile motion. That is, when I chuck something, what's the equations of it? What's the physics of it that allows the difference between a sportsman who can intuitively know where things will land to a physicist who can take some measurements and work out precisely where things can land, be it be a ball, but then actually look at a larger ball or a bullet or anything like that. And that's quite a complicated thing to look at by the time you look at all the features that you'd think of as a baseball person. You'd have the spin, the atmosphere, the drag, and all that type of stuff. And so what we do in science, start off simply, we remove a lot of those things forward. Now we have to go back and start to say what are the little fields of science. There are many terms for fields of science. If there's something still, we call it statics. But statics is involved in balanced forces. We can draw the forces on something, and the forces must be equal, and there must be no resultant force, and it's a static situation. Where something is moving, it will accelerate. That's called dynamics. And then there's solid motion or rotational motion, a whole field of that. So there's statics, dynamics. Kinematics is a story of force and motion, kinematics. And then there's projectile motions, where I have an object and it is given an initial force or direction, and it then travels under no other force except the force of gravity, usually. But in the initial examples, we're going to switch off the force of gravity just to get the basic ideas under your belt. Now, normally we have to start to, before we actually teach this, is actually teach mass and speed and units of measure. But in the nature of this game, it's going to be natural to come across. So to start off with, you have three students and two boards, two foam boards with a 1 millimeter a square spacing graph paper and pins. You can see from this point in time, we have a situation where the students will methodically place a pin movement every second. So every move corresponds to a second, and every grid square corresponds to a meter. So you can start off showing what the difference between a meter per second and 10 meters per second in motion along the ground, the x-axis, and the y-axis is the height. So I have the two students there and a third student to actually look at either side. So it's going to be a bit of a combination of Battleship, and which is a graphing game where you people call out coordinates and know where things are. The third person can actually quickly look at the two boards and see if there's a hit. And so we've got obviously one person will be firing, the other person will be flying their plane across the sky, high up in the sky, to do it. But the first examples is where you teach people to move their pins at 1 meter per second. Now, the way that you do this is put in one pin, and so there's no cognitive load to realize where the pins have gone. You put the first pin, say a yellow pin, the pins after that are white pins, where the you could have it that the pin you first put in, say at it's traveling at 1 meter per second from left to right, you've got the 0-0 axis. It's traveling from left to right, so the first pin can be yellow pin. The next pin in, if it's traveling at 2 meters per second to the right, will be at the position of 2,0, or that's its locate coordinate position. You'll put in a white pin there. Then the next coordinate, the next time, the next second, in 2 seconds' time, it will be at a coordinate of 2,0. So what you can do is that you can put the next pin in as a white pin, or you can make the pin that you last put in black, interchange it, and then with a white pin, so that historic pins are white and the pin where it is at the last moment is black, because it's going to be a bit complicated. Can you see where it starts and you can see where it finishes at black? Why I say the last pin can be black, because you actually can make that pin a different shape, something that corresponds to a physical area. inasmuch that it's going to be hard to hit a pin with a pin, but if you make one person who's flying their plane across the board have something that puts in, which is, say, 5 pins across or 5 meters across, you have a pin with the actual plane placed there. So you've got the historic place to record where it's been, but the new place where it's finally is at. And so we've got the structure here where we're teaching the basics. No gravitational field at the moment, but we're teaching constant velocity. And we're ready for the very first run at the game where things go at constant velocity. And guns and or planes can actually, the guns on the ground can fire directly up at a particular position going up, and a plane over the top can travel at the top at a various various velocities. Now, for the objective is for the first player to fire shots upwards and hit a plane which is flying across. They can't see the plane, but the third student can observe when the dots will intersect, and especially if they call out the overall coordinates from it, they can judge it. Why you have a third person there is to actually increase the speed and act as coach for the various students. Now, you obviously have the parameters, and the student who has the plane will be given a card which says the different altitudes in meters they can fly and the different speeds in meters they can fly, but they initially can only fly horizontally. So the process begins, and of course person firing up can fire up at different velocities. Of course, if they fire up at a slow velocity, their pin will be traveling through more slowly when it reaches there, and they can select to fire from any position but vertically up, fire several at the same time. So at the same time you fire one and it's traveling up, you can fire a second one, but you can actually plot where the pins are because you can actually move it all up at the same time. So one plane, but several anti-aircraft missiles being sent up at the same time at a constant velocity. So we want to introduce into this the next concepts of things traveling at an angle. In each time, the student may advance it 2 units up and 1 unit across, 2 units up and 1 unit across, and you could see that specification. Now, you can tell them that they're allowed to vary the horizontal velocity by a certain amount, but then you can actually fix them so they can select different angles to fire at. You can then start to reel it out and increase and each time it's in meters per second, then you can say that they can fire at an angle of their choosing, but at but the final velocity has to be between two values. Now, that means that they have to then work out what angle they can do and then what the velocity is for that, and that's in terms of distance. And of course the application of that is the application of the Pythagorean theorem, the square root of the x squared plus the y squared to get up, and so you can vary this, and then the plane above can have a different dive or altitude climbing rates, again with a initial they can fly up at 1 in 10, but have a maximum speed of specified, similar to that. So this, in order to get the game going, has different levels of complexity. And you can have this self-limiting that they go up as they pass different levels. It goes up in natural complexity. Then the next level of complexity we want to add into is add a acceleration or deceleration of the plane. So the plane can start off saying traveling at 10 meters per second, but can change its velocity, its acceleration at 1 meter per second per second. And this is actually in just in units. So all the time you're subtly teaching velocities in meters per second, accelerations in meters per second per second, and going across, and you're also giving some of the Pythagorean vector lengths that they're going across. And then, of course, by doing this, they're putting pins in, they can actually see what acceleration would look like in a ticker tape, I think. So if they're accelerating, the actual points can start to increase as they travel across. And so they can get different tactics to make it more difficult or easier to shoot. Now, whether they shoot hit or not is a minor point. Then we come to, that's for the plane. We can reset the plane down and start to add deceleration of the gravitational field. So now, this is actually a complex thing to actually put in, because the gravitational field deceleration is 9.8, or roughly 10 meters per second per second. So if you actually applied that at this current scale, you would dramatically change things and make it rather difficult to actually plot. So it's important to actually put the gravitational field at 10 meters per second per second in there, but then in order to make the game more realistic, you're going to have to change the grid square from a 1 meter grid square to a 10 meter or 100 meter grid square. A 10 meter grid square means that you can launch it up at, say, 100 meters per second, which is 10 grid points, and after the first second it will travel 100 meters. Then the second, what you have to do here is a purist will notice that the initial acceleration the actual dealing with this is you've got a little half. You can actually say that the first distance it travels is 10 meters per second in that first unit. The next distance, 100 meters per second upwards, the next distance it will travel, if it's decelerated 10 meters per second, it will travel 90 meters per second. Now, when you actually get into it, it's a little bit more complicated than that, but as far as the game is concerned, this is an interesting thing to do. And then you can have the horizontal velocity being 10 meters per second and the vertical velocity being 100 meters per second, and watch the two things go across. Now, at this stage, it's a time to actually put the game aside for a moment and get both people plotting these trajectories, and they will have enormous fun doing this and seeing that it produces a parabola as you throw things up and down, and they can see different aspects of it. And then you can actually produce this to actually have it have sort of basically a tank battle and things like that going through. So this can expand, and obviously at this stage to let students actually develop the rules of a game, having seen how the game is developed forward, and then actually develop rules and then take those rules across and swap between student groups. So this is a long-term activity. Now, given the actual structure of schools and the rigorousness and the lack of innovation, the ability to actually teach in a different, innovative way, this typically can be put forward in a lunchtime, gifted and talented, advanced understanding class. And this way gives a level of buy-in in and enthusiasm that you can have there. If someone's not interested, they can just walk away and not pick up the basics understanding. But what they have to do is basically get a merit certificate at the end of it, or some sort of certificate that they have understood these various principles. Then what's rather good is to have two groups of students, one students who had this learning experience, another student who another group who haven't, getting the initial lecturer coming in and get the students who had the learning experience begin to try and explain to the students who have opted out of this learning experience to understand, and then get a sort of second draft cohort of students trying to instruct and improve. Now, the advantage of a game scenario is that you can teach this up to, say, year 10, and they can start to teach reduced versions of that to lower years to actually get things up, and eventually computer program this type of thing. So again, what will happen if you have a pin advancing to the right one grid square per second, or two grid squares per second, and that's per move, a second is a move, and then going up initially 10, then 9, then 8. It's incremental, so it will go from 10 to 19 to 27 to, I just think that's 8 and 7, 27 and 7 is 34 going across, and eventually it will come to a point where the vertical velocity will change. So there's a whole series of things that you can do to extract information out of this, leads to the natural ability to solve problems, and it is a sort of a beautiful way to quietly instill the actual principles or the visualization, the conceptualization of the formulas, and then teach the formulas later on. And you've started off with velocity only being in meters per second and acceleration being in meters per second squared. Then there's the next thing eventually to add mass. Now, just to repeat again, to have, if you're trying to actually get a projectile to hit another thing, it's to have the object having a physical dimension in meters, so they've got at least a chance of doing it. That's what I hope is a description, and the idea is to use a similar educational principle, the gentle opportunistic education potential as seen in games like Mousetrap or Chasey around the school, where there's tactics, or there's particularly Monopoly. It's one of these design games where it naturally teaches things, but the objective is in a Monopoly is to make everyone else bankrupt. In this one, it's to hit targets. But in an ideal world where we switch on different degrees of complexity in terms of speed at an angle, some vector work, and then eventually switch on the gravitational field. It's an interesting aspect to go through. So this is Peter Hill Explains. I hope this has been helpful for you. It's been helpful for me because I'm slowly getting up the podcasting skill of sort of knowing how to actually structure podcasting in my cardiac rehab day. So that's going for a walk, thinking about something, standing out here, looking out into the beautiful Australian bush, giving a podcast and finishing off. So signing off. In the meantime, please keep on doing science, thinking science, and teaching science.